Good morning.
Good morning.
You're listening to KBOO FM. This is More Talk Radio. My name is Cecil Prescott.
My name is Celeste Carey, and you're joining us either at 90.7 FM in the metro area, 91.9 if you are points east, in the Willamette River Valley, 100.7, and in the ether, KBOO.FM. Good morning.
We thank you for joining us this morning. And we invite you to participate in our morning conversation. Now, many of you have heard that we are in a countdown. I think it's 2 weeks or something like that before the United States falls into the bottom of the deep blue sea.
Well, now, we've had guests who told us our way of life was going to come to an end.
Mm.
Now, not meaning civilization as well. For many of us, it will be civilization as we know it. But if they don't raise the debt ceiling, is that what you're referring to?
That is.
Oh, okay. Yeah, then life as we know it could change drastically. No, will change drastically if they don't.
In the midst of all this conversation about the debt ceiling and the debt, we hope that we may help you this morning to get some clarification about what are the issues that are being discussed and what we should be concerned about as the congressional representatives and the president continue their ongoing negotiation. This morning, we'll have a discussion about the impact of the proposed suggestions by the president, by some members of Congress to change our way of doing things in terms of attacking the federal deficit and the debt. And hopefully we'll have some clarification about what does all of this have to do with the debt ceiling, if anything at all.
And maybe even something, what can we do?
Exactly.
How to prepare ourselves.
Joining us this morning to bring some light to all of this is Tim Casey, who's with Legal Momentum. He has played a key role in formulating and implementing legal advocacy agenda, especially as they focus on economic security issues around welfare, poverty, and women issues. Good morning, Mr. Casey. How are you?
Good morning. I'm great. Thank you for having me on the show.
Welcome indeed.
Thank you.
Well, we wanted to bring you onto our show to help our audience, to help me, I'll be honest, to understand exactly what's going on in Washington and the impact on many of us and the impact on those most vulnerable in our society. So perhaps we can begin by you formally introducing yourself and tell us about the work that you do.
Sure. I'm an attorney. I work at Legal Momentum. We were founded over 40 years ago, and the focus of our work is advocacy for women's rights, and we are particularly concerned about trying to secure women's economic and personal security. And the focus of my work in recent years has been on women's economic security, particularly the security of women who depend upon our nation's safety net programs during times of need.
Now, this is some information Cecil and I have covered before, but it seems that it bears repeating. Headlines even stated this a year ago, that the proposed budget cuts, or at least the things that were considered at the time and put on the table, were going to really impact families and women-headed families, whether they were employed women or just homemakers just barely making it through. Why is this still an issue? What has not, percolated through some people's brains here?
Well, women have lower average incomes than men and much higher average poverty rates than men because women are much more likely to be full-time caregivers and because they still face in discrimination in the employment market. And because of their higher poverty rates and their lower average incomes, women on average are more dependent on the key safety net programs, the programs to which families turn in times of need. And unfortunately, many of the budget cutting proposals that have either already passed the House or have been endorsed by the House Republican leadership would make sharp cuts in the safety net programs the TANF program, the cash welfare program, the food stamp program, the WIC program that so many women and men and families depend upon. And some proposals would also cut funding for child care that, you know, women and parents, you know, sometimes need in order to work and earn an income to support their families.
Isn't it also true, Tim, that many of the women who are employed also face risk because many of the cuts we find in terms of jobs are in the public sector, which has a high proportion of women employees?
Yes. I mean, right now, the most recent unemployment statistics are we have 14 million officially counted as unemployed, and many more who are actually, in fact, unemployed but not being counted as unemployed because of the way unemployment is technically defined. And we have over 6 million Americans who have been unemployed for 6 months or longer. So there are millions of women and men now who are in desperate need, who need a job and who may need assistance pending their getting a job. But meanwhile, you know, in Washington, the focus seems to be on cutting spending, which could, in fact, increase joblessness and cutting the safety net programs, which help the jobless.
We're speaking this morning with Tim Casey of Legal Momentum, particularly about the impact on women and children on the proposed cuts in the federal budget and what we can do about that. We want to invite you to participate in our conversation this morning. Our phone numbers are 503-231-8187.
And we especially want to invite people who have felt this impact and welcome new callers, as always, and give yourself a chance to share your strategies for how you are surviving, or as what's the new phrase, I think, is new, repurpose. So how are you repurposing yourself for as a woman for the upcoming job market, where we'll find maybe less traditional jobs for women, maybe jobs in the green sector, or whatever ways that you're finding to re-employ yourself.
Now, Tim, I'm hoping you can help me understand exactly what's going on at the White House at this point in time. Now, the president had a proposal to significantly cut some of the social safety programs in the federal government. I guess it was taken off the table when the Republican leader could not get his Republican House members to possibly support it. What is the status of that, and what does any of that have to do with the debt ceiling?
Well, the debt ceiling is simply a number in law which limits the amount of debt the United States, the federal government, can carry. And it basically, debt is simply what we need to pay for obligations we've already incurred. Debt ceiling needs to be increased because the amount we owe is soon going to exceed the debt ceiling. And everyone, I think every rational person, agrees that we need to raise the debt ceiling, otherwise we'll go into default. And that could just wreck the economy, lead to a huge increase in joblessness and a sharp cut in stock prices. So everyone agrees it needs to be done. And it's sort of being used now by some to sort of blackmail the country into making sharp cuts in safety net programs and other social welfare spending that are just crucial to women and children and families.
What were some of the, now I understand the president had a proposal to cut some of those. Can you tell us exactly what his proposed cuts were?
Well, I'd love to be able to tell you, but the details were never released. Yeah. All that I've seen at least, is second or third hand reports, so it's very hard. The proposals that have actually, you know, the details of which are available, and some of which have been passed by the House, have been the Republican proposals. There's very little known, at least by me, about what the president is proposing.
Mm-hmm.
Hopefully he won't be proposing the type of cuts that the House Republicans have proposed, because they would do untold damage to women, children, and families.
Can you identify some of the proposed cuts in the House budgets?
Sure. Well, there are proposals that would restructure the food stamp program, which is probably one of the nation's most important safety net programs, if not the most important safety net programs for low-income families. Provides benefits that are desperately needed for families to feed themselves and their children. So there have been proposals to restructure that program, to cap spending, and to change the program in a way that over time would significantly likely reduce benefits. That's one example. There have been proposals to reduce child care funding. There have been proposals to reduce funding for the WIC program, which provides nutrition assistance to pregnant women and women with very young children. There have been proposals to cut the cash welfare program called TANF, which provides benefits to our nation's poorest families and doesn't do a very good job right now with the amount currently being spent, and will presumably do a far worse job if the funding is cut even more. Right now, the welfare program reaches less than one out of four poor children and provides benefits that average less than $5 a person a day. In Oregon, for example, the monthly benefit for a family of three is only $485 a month. You can't really take care of a family adequately on $485 a month. And the benefit is actually lower than that in the majority of the states.
I've also been reading that there have been what I'll call some residual effects of the proposed budget cuts and spending caps. For example, in some states, as you mentioned earlier, there's been issues with the gender equity pay. And, for example, in Minnesota, there's been some attacks on policies that guarantee women the same pay scales as men. Are there any proposals, to your knowledge, beyond state wrangling that may come out of our federal legislation?
Well, I'm not aware of any proposals pending that would weaken the current non-discrimination provisions in federal law. But on the other hand, there are many ways in which this anti-discrimination protection in federal law need to be strengthened, particularly for many reasons, but including the recent Supreme Court decision in the Walmart case, which prevented a class of over 1 million women from even getting a right as a class to try their claims, their sex discrimination claims against Walmart. So there are many ways in which the sex discrimination and the race discrimination laws need to be strengthened. And right now, there's nothing seriously being considered by Congress that would really strengthen the anti-discrimination laws the way they need to be strengthened.
And so what you think, in absence of any strong and definitive action coming out of the federal government, states are kind of using this as an opportunity to basically attack these equal pay laws?
No, I haven't actually seen that.
I've read that it is happening in Minnesota, or rather a bill was offered, but they shame the freshman legislator that brought it in, so that now it's still in the House, but it's not moving any further. But this was in Minnesota. You are listening to KBOO Portland, 90.7 here in the city. This is More Talk Radio with Cecil and myself, Celeste. We're speaking with Tim Casey. We welcome your phone calls here if you've got questions about the proposed cuts and caps that could affect women's livelihood and families' livelihood. The phone number is 503-231-8187.
And especially if you've been impacted by these proposed cuts, if you are on TANF or if you are on a program that face cuts, we want to hear how this might impact you and what you see as what you can do to change this. Our numbers again are 503-231-8187. Mr. Casey, in addition to these proposed cuts of the budget, I understand that there's a need to resist these by any means necessary by people writing their congressional representatives and advocating. What are some things that you suggest people should do, and what are some of the key issues that we should be looking at this point in time?
Well, in terms of the issues, there is so much potentially on the table now that it's almost hard to have a list of everything that people should be talking about. But certainly one key message is that we need to preserve and strengthen the safety net programs for those in our country who are in need. The food stamp program, the cash welfare program, the WIC program, and other programs that provide assistance to those in need. We have astonishingly high rates right now of poverty, of hunger, and homelessness. And if we weaken the safety net further, we'll see sharp increases in hunger, in homelessness, and poverty, number one. And number two, you know, the economy basically runs on consumer spending. If consumer spending decreases, one will usually we can expect to see an increase in unemployment. And with unemployment already at incredibly high levels, we need to preserve the safety net, not only to help those who are direct beneficiaries, but in order to keep consumer spending at a level where there will be some chance of promoting economic recovery and an increase in employment.
Now,
Well, so I think the most important thing is that people need to be in touch with their representatives in Congress and to convey the message that we need a budget that preserves and strengthens the safety net and that treats those in need as if they are members of our community and recognizes their right to an adequate standard of living. We can't abandon the needy at this time.
Now, this is where it becomes very strange and strange for me. In a time of high unemployment, of economic insecurity, many people are very, very vulnerable. Why then is it seems that we continue to want to balance the budget on the back of those least able to afford it, especially those in need?
Well, I'm not an expert on that, but I think part, you know, my experience tells me that often people in need are viewed as being the politically vulnerable group. Many of them are disproportionately children, and children don't vote. And there are many studies that show that people who are poor are less likely to vote. So you have a group that includes many children and includes adults who are less likely on average to vote than the average American. So that's what some people suggest drives proposals to cut the safety net in times of need.
Even as representatives are supposed to be representing those populations.
Yes.
Well, we have one caller online. Let's go to that caller. Richard, good morning.
Well, good morning. Thank you for allowing any opportunity to speak. I have so much to say, but in this case, all the money that's needed for all the programs is a tremendous amount of money, but it is a drop in the bucket to what is going to the military budget. Mm-hmm. And to be truthful and use as short of words as possible, these are war crimes that are being perpetrated on our own people, let alone people of the world. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you, Richard. He suggested, and I think I certainly agree with him in terms of where we're looking at in terms of the budget, potential budget savings, that we seem to be ignoring a large chunk, and that is related to the military and Pentagon. Are those more or less off the table for these representatives?
Well, you know, we at League of Momentum, we focus primarily on the spending that we think the government needs to engage in, and our focus is on the safety net programs. So I don't really know that much about the degree to which Pentagon spending is on the table. So what we've been focusing on is the need to preserve the safety net, to preserve and strengthen the safety net programs.
Right.
Well, is one of the ways to do that is by offering, instead of cutting the safety nets, to look at other places in the budget to cut?
Absolutely.
We do have another caller here online. I'm going to hold my question until after. Good morning. Mike from Topeka.
Hi there. I was on the call line, and I think maybe the previous caller touched on my question, which is why can't they just cut across the board with the federal debt budget instead of getting into this discretionary spending so much? And, you know, I suppose accepting salaries, but why can't they just go right across the board and keep it under the debt limit? Over.
You know, that seems to be the common logic that, many of us apply, but it seems as though we're caught in some partisan wrangling. And by partisan wrangling, sometimes it's even within the parties. You know, the parties will argue, but I don't know why they're not put on the table. I don't know why our president keeps putting things like Medicare and Social Security back on the table as well. Any thoughts on that, Tim?
No, it's hard to understand why in a time of increased poverty, increased hunger, increased homelessness, the focus is on cutting social welfare spending. It doesn't make sense. It doesn't serve the needs of our country, and it certainly doesn't serve the needs of those who are dependent on those programs to meet their basic needs.
Well, let me ask this question from a different perspective then. We've asked, well, why is this still on the table, or why are we not doing that? But let's look at who is at the table. I mean, are women represented in any of these forums or at any of these places? I know that the Older Women's Economic Security Task Force, part of the National Coalition of Women, has sent a letter to the president and call for concerns of women to be considered, and that members of the administration who have expertise be invited. Is that something that your group has participated in?
Well, many women's rights advocacy organizations have communicated both the House leadership and the Obama administration the imperative need to protect the programs upon which women and families depend.
So, and what kind of response are they getting when they keep asking to be included at the table and to have these concerns met?
Well, you know, I think what typically happens here is you communicate your message and you don't get a direct response.
Mm-hmm.
And the important thing is, you know, for people to keep communicating, because the reality is that the political system, you know, is not going to respond unless people keep communicating.
And who are some of our legislators who both on the state and maybe federal level, that you and other women's advocacy organizations have tagged as allies?
Well, without, you know, singling out particular individuals, certainly, you know, the Senate is much more, and the Obama administration have been much more supportive of the safety net programs than the current House leadership. The current Republican majority in the House has, you know, endorsed or passed many proposals that would, you know, really shrivel the safety net. So as a general matter, the Senate and the Obama administration have been more supportive. There are individual members who are better, some better than others on the issues, some worse. But it's important that they all hear about the importance of protecting these programs.
You're listening to KBOO. This is More Talk Radio. My name is Cecil. I'm here with my co-host, Celeste. We are speaking with Tim Casey of Legal Momentum. This topic this morning is the proposed federal budget cuts and the impact on women and children and what we can do to change the nature of the conversation. Phone numbers here are 503-231-8187. We invite your calls and comments, especially if you are impacted by these programs. Again, our phone numbers are 503-231-8187. As part of your long-term strategy, Mr. Casey, do you think that there should we also look at the 2012 election, or should we concentrate on the budget right now?
Well, I guess first things first. And the issues that are on, it's almost impossible to overstate the importance of the issues that are on the table right now. Some of the, you know, the cuts that are being suggested by some would total tens, hundreds of billions, trillions of dollars, and obviously all those would not come out of the safety net programs that are targeted to those in need, but a large amount would be. So the issues on the table right now are incredibly important, and that's why it's so extremely important for your listeners to be as much involved as they possibly can be in right now in the process that's going on to determine what will happen with the budget and with the debt ceiling.
You're listening to KBOO Portland. Now, this is your opportunity to call in and ask some questions. We know many people have been concerned about where are we headed in terms of this jobless recovery, how it is impacting women and families. And you've been hearing some of the examples of not only things that have already happened, but proposals of even deeper cuts or lower caps. But it's a good time to call in and share your concerns or share your examples of how you are surviving this or ways that you are petitioning to get women's concerns and families' concerns heard. We've heard that there are members of Congress who are listening, but apparently they're not listening or they're not vocal enough. So we'd also welcome your strategies for how you are trying to get the alarm sound. 503-231-8187. Good time to call now because we've got lines open. Good morning, Alyssa. You're on the air. Hello? Okay, we got the signal that the kick is not good. Oh, there we go.
Yes,
hello. Good. Thanks for hanging in there.
No problem. I thought we'd get a woman's perspective in on this.
Good. Thank you.
Yeah, I actually am currently a participant of some of our supports that we have in our state. I have child care for my children so that I can go to work, and we also receive food benefits. I was given a letter this January, actually, that I would be losing all of my child care benefits come June.
Wow.
Thus far, it has not come to fruition.
Mm-hmm.
and when I called to check my status, they said that they would give me a 30-day termination notice, but at this time, I still have my benefits.
Mm. Well, that's a blessing, at least. So
It is.
What kind of strategies are you hearing from the agencies that, you know, that help you in terms of providing health care?
That's okay. I will note that they really kind of keep a closed mouth, that they don't know what's going on, and that that there's nothing that they can do about it. And it's really a frustrating situation. If I lose my child care, I can't go to work. And if I can't go to work, I'm right back where I started, you know, back on TANF, which is an almost impossible program anyway.
Yes.
I have five kids. I work 3 days, I'm gone 12 hours, and I can see the reason that they would cut child care, because I don't have the capacity as a single parent to make ends meet, so even with my 12-hour days, I still won't exceed beyond food stamp level, so if they cut my child care, they wouldn't have to pay the $900 a kid, and they dish out that $400 a month TANF and have a bunch of really unproductive, struggling families sitting on their couch wishing they could become employed in our detrimental economy.
So it seems as if defeating the purpose. I mean, what are our goals? To make sure that people are self-sufficient and able to work and support their families, or to barely survive on TANF?
It's a really depressing situation. I really have nothing more but perspective and my own experience to share, but I did want to comment that there are a lot of families looking at the potential to lose their child care, and that when we do that, we take any iota of self-sufficiency and the ability to support oneself and their family away from people who are already struggling.
Well, we thank you so much for your call, and, you know, our prayers are out there with you that you can, you know, continue to get your child care.
Absolutely, and I'm only one of many, so thank you very much.
Yeah, I just want to reinforce that point. That's a story that's happening all over the country now. We've historically always underfunded child care. So we say to single mothers, you know, through welfare reform, we want you to work, but we then don't provide the child care that so many need in order to work. And right now, many parents who are receiving child care, which enables them to work and not to be dependent upon the cash welfare programs, they're getting notices from the state that because of the decline in state revenues, a reduction in federal funding for states, the state's going to be cutting back on child care. which would drive more women out of the job market and back onto the welfare rolls, where they'll then be criticized for being, quote, lazy welfare moms. So it's a real catch-22 for so many single mothers out there who are trying so hard to work and support their families to be faced with the horrible threat that they'll lose the child care, which they need in order to keep working.
Well, you know, this has another ripple, and we've talked about that, and that is the fact that the women who are working as child care providers will also lose because they won't be able to work. And so many of these women have just unionized, you know, to provide a higher standard of care. And so there is there's an expectation that that will help them step out of poverty. But if you have the double whammy of the cuts in child care, so women can't work, well, then those women can't work either.
And there's even a triple whammy, because as we, you know, people at the bottom, people who have the lowest incomes, they spend their money right away, and that helps the economy keep going and help create jobs. So if we cut the incomes to those at the bottom of the income scale, they're not going to be able to spend, and we're going to see a loss of jobs over time.
Our numbers here are 503-231-8187. We're speaking this morning with Tim Casey of Legal Momentum. We're speaking, our topic this morning is the proposed federal budget cuts and the impact on women and children. Let's go to our next caller, Leah. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning. My name is Leah Maka, and I'm a member of KBOO. We have been for years. But I'm also 68 years old, and I have a family. I'm a Social Security person. I have a very limited income. I'm on food stamps. I visit the food banks. I'm on the Oregon Health Plan. My family's been homeless three times in the last 2 years. My daughter finally got a good job, and my son-in-law is still looking for work. He's been working off and on for 2 years. So the cut in food stamps to my family, because of my daughter's situation, she still gets food stamps even though she's working, would be devastating. We have three children. I help them out of my own little budget, but I'm looking at getting my housing cut, I'm looking at food stamp cuts, and how I'm going to deal with that. One of the things I experience and my family experiences is the level of stress that keeps us almost incapacitated.
Yes.
It's hard to think of solutions. Mm-hmm. It's hard to think of strategies. It's hard to think about the resources that we could access or go find them, because it takes time and energy and it takes motivation, and we get sapped of that energy that's needed to move us to where we need to be, to go look for those things, to find those resources. So I'm busy planting food in my own garden, in my own apartment place, and at other places, and encouraging everybody to plant food, because if our food stamps are cut, our local gardens and our local farms are going to be our major resources.
Thank you so much for strategies. And again, our prayers are out. We're hearing, you know, time and time again how families are trying to strategize. And just out of curiosity, now, it's too much for one person to try to do all of those tasks that you need, like for somebody to look for resources or somebody to plan the meals. I'm sure that divvying up the work is one of the things, one of the strategies that you use. How does that work in terms of having maybe each person do different tasks toward helping the family maintain?
Well, it's difficult. I'm the one who usually does it, because my daughter's main thing is to work, take care of three kids. My son-in-law is doing job stuff, but he's also doing some other kinds of stuff that isn't very productive. But so we all go to the food bank. It's very difficult. I'm the one who usually does it. My background is in social services, and I was a counselor and worked in agencies for years. So I am the one who usually picks up the phone and just starts calling. One of the best things people can do for themselves, and I'm part of that group, is to get involved with the Know Your Neighbor group. It's part of the Multnomah County preparedness work.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that the Know Your Neighbor does is it you get to know your neighbors, you talk and find things in common, and then you look at solutions. So one of the things that came out of that for me in my apartment complex was five different women came to me when they saw me putting in some garden here and said, "Did you know, can we do this?" And I said, "Sure, we just do it." And they said, "Won't we get in trouble?" And I said, "I don't think so." And by the time we get there, you know, hey, if they want good people in their apartments, they better allow us to feed ourselves.
Yes.
And
yes.
So that's what we're doing. We're doing it with care. We're maintaining things. We're doing it neatly. You know, we're honoring our space and actually putting in flowers and making it a whole lot nicer. So those, the preparedness movement, the Know Your Neighbor, is really a great opportunity, and it comes with free information and support through the neighborhoods. It doesn't cost anything. Multnomah County provides all their supplies. So there's a group called SNAP, and if you just check that out, there's one in Seattle, and there's one in Selwood now, and just go to Selwood SNAP. We, through the Transition Movement, Transition PDX, you'll get all kinds of information. But that's just, that's your next-door neighbor.
Sure.
So it's the closest thing that you can do is just talk to your neighbor.
And network.
And network.
And share,
yeah,
talents
and find out what
and,
it
yes,
is
skills
your neighbor needs. And, you know who needs, you know, it's part of our preparedness network. So I really encourage people to do that. Whatever comes down, we're going to need each other.
Thank you, Leah.
Bye-bye.
Best advice.
We're speaking this morning with Tim Casey. This is More Talk Radio. My name is Cecil. I'm here with my co-host, Celeste. Our phone number is here at 503-231-8187. The subject this morning is the federal budget cuts and the impact on women and children and what we can do to challenge those proposed cuts and what people are doing to survive. Tim, as we heard those last couple of stories of the impact on real people's life, I was wondering if you could say some more in terms of how people are needing to survive likelihood that their livelihood will be cut.
Well, it's obviously, you know, very, very difficult. I think as the previous caller just explained, being poor, in addition to all the, you know, material hardship that goes with being poor, not enough food, the threat of losing one's home, actual homelessness, not being able to afford to see a doctor or to get a medicine, all that's accompanied by tremendous amount of stress that makes it, you know, daily existence so much more difficult. People who are poor sometimes often have to work more and do work more than people who are not poor just to get by, just to survive. And it's very, very stressful. And, of course, you know, the poverty rate for children in this country, the official poverty rate is 20%, you know, much, much higher than other rich countries. And there are, you know, and there's, you know, high rates of hunger, high rates of homelessness. And there are many studies that tell us that poverty during childhood has impacts for many of those who are poor later in life that makes it harder for them to succeed in the job market, harder for them to contribute to our society. So it's, you know, helping those in need is not just the right thing to do because it's the right thing to do, but if we want to think about the future of our country and whether our children will be able to grow up and make valuable contributions, we need to think about our safety net programs as programs that are investments in children and investments in the future generation.
Mm-hmm. Now, one thing we often hear from those who want to cut our budgets or cut this social safety net is that, well, it's not the responsibility of government. Leave that to churches and nonprofits. Certainly you hear that. And as someone who works in nonprofit field, I know that the added stress that's added by trying to come up with figures and the challenge it is when we have to turn people away at the door. What are what are nonprofits and churches do and cannot do when people come to their doors?
Well, you know, the reality is that nonprofits and churches, staffed though they are with people who are incredibly dedicated and committed to helping those who come to their doors, they just don't have the resources. It's simply impossible for nonprofits and for churches to meet the needs of the poor the way those needs have to be met. There is no country like ours, anywhere in the world, who depends upon churches or nonprofits to meet the needs of the poor. What we can do, you know, sometimes we administer benefits that are provided by the poor, provided by the government for the poor, or we advocate for people to come to us to help them get the benefits that are provided by the government. But recall that, you know, we should not think of the poor as a static group, as a group that never changes over time. People are always constantly rising in and out of poverty. And those who are in need at one point in time in their lives, at a later point in time, would be working and contributing, paying taxes and contributing to the funding that goes to the safety net programs. But we just can't expect churches and nonprofits to meet the needs. They just don't have the resources.
What about in terms of advocating that we find some type of equity in the hiring practices? We talked about on More Talk Radio a few months ago the fact that in terms of women's recovery and recovering jobs, women are getting fewer jobs than men, and the few jobs that they are getting have been canceled out by the fact there's been a lot of job cuts in the public sector, which, again, as I mentioned, you know, hire a lot of women. What's been doing in terms of advocating that we find more private sector employers for women?
Well, you know, during the early parts of the Great Recession's impact, there were more men, you know, more job losses among men. In the more recent period, more, you know, a greater rate of job losses among women. But the reality is right now that there are incredibly high rates of joblessness of both men and women.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, we do need to address the pervasive, you know, the existence of employment discrimination and wage discrimination and occupational segregation in the job market that sometimes results in higher unemployment for women or lower wages than men who are doing similar work or comparable work or the same work. But the major need at this point in time is we need to stimulate the economy and to create more jobs for both men and women. Over 14 million now currently unemployed, not counting those who are unemployed but not counted by the government as unemployed. Mm-hmm. Over 6 million people unemployed for over 6 months. It's incredible to me that the federal government is so focused right now on cutting spending as opposed to focusing on the need to take action to create jobs that will benefit women and children and families.
And why is that? Is that because these people don't have advocates in Washington, as you suggested earlier?
Or is it this pervasive attitude that the government doesn't create jobs?
Well, I see most of this as emanating from the Newhouse leadership. That seems to be, you know, driven by its Tea Party base into making proposals that, you know, most observers agree are incredibly extreme, and that at least many agree will have incredibly damaging impacts on the poor and low-income families.
We're speaking this morning with Tim Casey of Legal Momentum. Our numbers are 503-231-8187. Our topic this morning is the proposed federal budget cuts and the impact on women and children. What will this do to our society? Let me remind you that you are listening to KBOO, and coming up at 9 is the Omo Variety Hour. One half the world is on verge of starvation and what to do about it. A realistic vision of life after capitalism, and labor in the AT&T and T-Mobile merger, and socialism, feminism, and cyborgs. At 10 is Chris Andre, who hosts Air Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary. At 10:15 on Locus Focus, the guest is journalist Christian Parenti. In his new book, Tropics of Chaos, Climate Change and the New Geography Violence, Pirante argues that a new era of climate war is upon us. At 11 on Health Watch, Dr. David Naiman speaks with Dr. Mark Acronym, author of How We Age, about his work counseling the residents of Miami Jewish Health System's patients with an average age of 90 years old. And at 11:30, author Stimulus from the Oregon Fair Trade Campaign talks about urging Oregon Representative Earl Blumenauer to vote against the Columbia Free Trade Agreement. Thank KBOO members for your support. And if you are not a member, you can become one by going to KBOO-FM and clicking on the tip jar. Right now, this is More Talk Radio. My name is Cecil.
I'm Celeste, and we're speaking with Tim Casey here of Legal Momentum. And we'll go to our next caller. Thank you for holding. Good morning, John.
Hi, good morning. I just am wondering if you guys, there was an article over the weekend from the Washington Post. It might have even been this morning, that talked about a time back in 1979 when the federal government missed some debt payments. And the result of that at the end was that the cost of new loans to the federal government went up at least half a percentage point. And the point of the article was that over the course of time, as the government took on new and new loans, the overall cost of those, that relatively small default turned out to be billions and billions of dollars shouldered by the taxpayers. And I'm just wondering, you know, in the sense of reaching some consensus to this debt limit problem, if it isn't better to reach consensus now with some cuts to programs, as painful as they might be, in order to avoid the sort of overall burden on the federal government that could take decades. Whereas, you know, the cuts we're talking about now are the whim of the current Tea Party-controlled House that I hope at least will be a passing fad and will be something that could be reversed by future Congresses. Whereas this default and the idea that we're going to be paying more and more in interest isn't something that Congresses in the future will be able to take care of. It will be at the discretion of our creditors.
Well, I think you're bringing up a really good point, and I know we've had this before with the Bush administration in terms of locking horns. But my question would be, and I'm sure that Tim Casey would agree, is, well, why cut the safety net programs? For example, why don't we cut something like, oh, I don't know, the defense budget?
I totally agree that is the right answer, but that's not the reality of the Congress that we have.
But, and that's the problem.
Donald Rumsfeld.
Yes.
And we're being held hostage by a vocal minority in those congressional districts and in other parts of the country where, for whatever reason, they do believe that the most important thing right now is to cut government spending.
So we should become more vocal, because I still can't see throwing out the bathwater and the baby.
Absolutely. I agree that being more vocal and more involved is the right answer. But as we approach this very real deadline, it occurs to me that the most prudent thing to do might be to avoid the default and then hope that it's going to take more time than the next 3.5 weeks for our vocalness to take hold, I think, at least in time to make a difference in Congress, which doesn't have elections, obviously, for another year.
Okay, thank you so much for your call. Tim, any comments?
Well, it seems to me the right thing to do is to raise the debt ceiling. We don't, we know it's going to have to be done. Everyone agrees the debt ceiling is going to have to be raised. And what's going on now is just more of a political game to try to drive budget cuts that can't be really justified on the merits by this parade of horrors that will result from a default. But there's no need. We don't need to choose between not, preserving the safety net and raising the debt ceiling. We can do both. Oh. We should do both.
All right. It seems to be, I don't understand why the debt ceiling is tied to these discussions over the
mostly
budget.
Because that's the way they construe the argument. We've got another caller here online. Good morning.
Good morning. Thanks very much for having this great topic show. And we've got to stop playing softball with our language. these right-wing Republicans, Tea Party folk, they're all together, as far as I'm concerned, at the national level, and they are playing hardball. They want to break the Democrats. They want to break Obama. They want to kill the social safety net. They want power. They want to take over the presidency and everything they can get, because they're wholly owned and paid for by the super rich and the transnational corporations. And it's time, similar to the 30s and FDR and the Democrats, that we go for their credit card. They used our credit card for the last 20 years and have stolen everything they can get their hands on.
So how do we do that? How do we get their credit card?
Well, number one, we have to vote each and every election, and we have to vote for Democrats and progressive independents, mostly Democrats, unless the polls say that an independent has a chance to win. This is a winner-take-all system. We don't have any proportional government, and the only way we're going to get anything done is give Kitzhaber and Obama super majorities, and then we're going to have to push them, because a lot of them are a bunch of sellout corporate bums.
Okay.
That's our only chance in this declining empire.
Okay. Well, thank you so much for your call.
Thank you for listening. Bye-bye.
And, Tim, we'll give you the last word in terms of marching orders to our listeners.
Pick up the phone today. Call the White House. Call your senators. Call your representatives in Congress. And communicate to them the importance of preserving and strengthening the safety net. Number one. Number two, if you want to find out more about our work at Legal Momentum, please visit our website at legalmomentum.org. And thank you so much for having me on the show.
Well, thank you so much. And the bottom line is, as we've heard, we also need to have more women's voices heard. We need to make sure that we do make those calls. We need to also check in with our advocacy organizations. And we need to also check in with organizations that also advocate for family strength as well. This has been More Talk Radio on your Community Connection, KBOO Portland. I'm Celeste.
I'm Cecil. We'd like to thank our guest, Tim Casey. We'd like to thank our engineer, Steve, for keeping us online and on time.
Yes. And more importantly, we want to thank all of our members, old, new, and incoming. We will hear you next week here on your Community Connection, KBOO Portland.